Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. I'm William English, and today's guest is Clive Graham. Good afternoon, Clive.
Hi there, William.
Welcome back. You were the presenter of Sound Poets Exposed many years ago, long-standing, long-running series on resonance.
Yeah, in fact, I played this this piece, well, the part of which we'll play today, but I'll let you carry on with the intro. But I did actually play the whole of this back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, before that's a shock to me. That's a complete surprise to me now. You've just told me this. I thought this was going to be some premiere.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's a premiere of the vinyl edition.
Right.
But
we should say that today we are going to present this William S. Burroughs LP by you, released by you on Paradigm, spelt P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, like Paradigm. Paradigm, discs or records?
Discs.
Paradigm Discs, of which you are the sole proprietor.
No one else will join me.
Okay, so you've issued this record, William S. Burroughs' Curse Go Back.
Yeah.
And now you've just sprung this on me that, in fact, you played it years ago.
Yeah.
When was that?
Well, this really goes back to, I suppose, the start of the story, which is how I came across this material in the first place, which was because it was originally released as a CDR with a French magazine called Crash, mm-hmm. which I think the early editions of Crash were more kind of sort of an underground, sort of different creative style kind of magazine. And I think it ended up nowadays, if it's still called Crash, I think it is, it's more of a fashion magazine and quite a mainstream one as well. Uh-huh. In Paris. But the first edition had this CDR, which came out virtually without any kind of genuine permission.
When was this, roughly?
Well, that's a good question, because I think I heard it in the early 90s, and I got a copy of it when I was in Paris. And some friends of mine had the magazine, and they said, oh, yeah, I'll do a copy for you.
Yeah.
And it originally came out as a 97-track CD with random start IDs just all over it, in mid-sentence, in mid-word.
Yeah.
And they thought it was kind of like a nice idea to have that, and to then play the CD in random order.
So that came out with the magazine. It was issued, you got it free with the magazine.
Yeah,
right.
And it was, well, this'll date it, because Burroughs was still alive at the time, and he died in 97, if memory serves. And he'd given permission for it to actually appear. Mm-hmm. And then after he died, the guys who owned the estate wanted the thing withdrawn, which is just at the point where the thing was published. So I think it was 97 or 94. I can't remember when Burroughs died. But anyway, it's around that period. Mm. And so subsequently, only about 100 copies of this CD ever got sold with the magazine, and the rest were just trashed.
Right.
Yeah.
So making it a rarity, although being it could have been, I don't know, copied presumably. So why did they want it withdrawn?
That's not entirely clear to me. I think it's because for quite some time now there's been uncertainty about what to do with the audio archive that Burroughs recorded over the decades, and there's a lot of it. And up until a couple of years ago, very, very little of it was available. It all become kind of like collector's stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was a nice big box set that came out after he died, a sort of memorial thing. But that didn't cover it all. There was still plenty of real classics that had been unavailable for, 10, 20 years. Just like, why aren't these things available? Especially in a time where everything was getting reissued. But for some reason, they were just really taking their time with it. And then eventually they came up with a scheme as to
who is they.
Well, it's good. Even I'm not entirely clear, and I've met all the people involved.
Oh, right. Okay.
They're in America.
Right.
There's an English guy who's in New York who runs the publishing company. He's the man who takes the paychecks, really. And
so he had no family.
Burroughs?
Yeah.
He did, actually. He had a son who also died.
Of course, yes. He died young, didn't he?
Yeah.
He died a long time ago.
That's right.
Okay, so he couldn't have claimed the estate.
It was really handed down to a very close network of people that Burroughs had been working with towards the very... So the last 10, 20 years of his life, where he, because he retired to Lawrence in Kansas, quite a small town just outside of Kansas City. And that's where he lived out the last decades of his life,
mm-hmm.
in quite a humble house. I visited there because they still run the show from that house. There's a caretaker there. They still go there and have meetings and dinner and such like, and the house has been left almost in a museum in a way.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, nothing has really been changed that much. There's been no refurb done since he died in the 90s. And
so these people are what a sort of conglomerate of business people and publishers and
they're concerned and interested people. They were, in fact, there's his secretary who was his secretary since the 70s. A guy called James Grauerholtz, he's the main man. Nothing happens without his approval.
Right.
Yeah. So that was basically how this CDR didn't have his approval. So he had the thing withdrawn, even though the guys in Paris, principally a guy called Ramuncho Mata, who's he was Brian Gysin's assistant for many, many years since he was really a dropout school kid. And this particular tape was one that Gysin recorded in London and sent to Gysin as a gift, tape in the mail.
Gysin recorded it in London?
No.
Burroughs recorded it in London.
Yeah, it's a completely...
Sends it to Gysin.
Yeah, and so when Gysin dies, then there's this, Gysin systematically destroyed tons and tons of material when he knew that the end was near. A lot of his artwork, a lot of his writings... Very little survived.
I'm losing the plot here.
I know, I'm sorry. Gysin
destroyed whose work?
His own work.
His own work. Gysin destroyed Gysin's work.
Let me try and bring it back in because it's...
Yes.
So Ramuncho was his kind of assistant, and it was him along with another friend in Paris who put this CD out.
Right.
Which was originally called... Electronic Revolution, which was the title that we changed, and it's now called Kersko Back.
Which is the title of a book, isn't it? One of his books is called, booklet.
It's an essay, really.
Yeah, right.
And an interesting one, quite an in-depth and interesting one. It's a, but there's only a certain section of it that deals with the material that this pertains to.
Okay.
And so the idea of calling it Electronic Revolution seemed a bit... of a strange one, but then calling it Kersko Back also seems very strange because that's a title of another piece. In fact, you've got it with you. So that's on that Sub Rosa CD.
Okay.
I think I've drifted into several stories without bringing it all back into something that listeners will understand.
Burroughs people will like this, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So who came up with Kersko Back then?
Well, that was that great James Grauerholtz came up with that title, and I tried to dissuade him from it. I thought it was... For starters, it's a title of a piece that is on a record, and it's a very short piece, and a very lovely piece. I like it very much, and also Kersko Back is the start of a witch's hex that was something that I think it was Burroughs's nanny, and when he was a kid, being brought up as he was obviously part of a very wealthy family in St. Louis.
Yeah,
and his nanny at that time used to sort of recite this hex kind of little, I don't know, it's like a rhyming kind of curse, and the first line of which is "Curse, go back," and that got used. Burroughs used that little kind of refrain from his nanny when he did he overdubbed that, that film called Hexen or Hexen?
Yeah, yeah.
That very early witchcraft film. Because he actually did the the narration for it, one edition of it has Burroughs doing the narration for the first like 15 minutes of it.
Uh-huh.
And he does the Curse Go Back thing on that as well. So basically, I mean, prior to this record coming out.
You know, the Curse Go Back being the opening line.
Do I know the rest of it?
Of what? Is it a, I mean, well, it's kind of a strange thing for a nanny to recite to a child, isn't it?
That's right, it is. And I think,
Burroughs, can blame the nanny then.
Burroughs certainly did.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he had a very disturbing and, well, his whole life is disturbing,
yes.
Isn't it, really, from start to finish.
Yeah.
But he blames a lot of these dark patches in his adult life back to his childhood, back to some dark memories that he could never quite recount anyway. There's things that happened that he just blacked out on.
Right.
Various kind of assaults and, you know, wrongdoings to him as a child.
Yes.
He had this witchy kind of, you know, kind of nursemaid.
Right.
Who looked after him.
Okay.
And, so how true it all is, I can't verify any of it, but it's there in all the biographies, you know.
Okay. But interestingly, I mean, there are notes with this LP. You've issued it as a vinyl LP. Very elegant looking thing. It's transparent with a sort of a nice image in the middle of a reel to reel tape.
Apparently, that is the tape.
Right.
Well, the Ramuncho, who I then contacted, you know, the guy who owned the tape, he said, Geisen left me 23 reels, of which this is just one. He said, well, I haven't got round to playing the other ones yet. And I'm thinking, what is on them, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's just, again, it all sounds a bit unlikely that he hasn't heard these tapes. Anyway, carry on.
There's notes written by Ben Harper within the LP sleeve.
Yeah.
And when you read through it, there is reference to, again, this curse business where obviously Burroughs believed in the power of cursing.
He believed in all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
He took up and dropped various belief systems.
Right.
He was very, very, you know, kind of gullible chap in many ways and would very...
Or curious.
You could say that. And I think a lot of it fed through into his more creative writing styles. I mean, you know, I don't think it was entirely a wasted pursuit. But he had a lot of sort of cranky interests. And towards the end, big time into shamanism and, you know, would go to sweat lodges and things. Yeah, no, he was...
Okay.
He was prone to believe anything, really.
Okay. But he attached himself... Briefly, to the Scientology cult.
Yeah.
Actually,
for quite some time, he drove a lot of people nuts about it. You know,
right.
There was a long phase. A lot of his London existence was driven by an obsession with Scientology, it has to be said.
Right.
Yeah.
And the notes end with a sort of story where he seems to imagine that he seems like he broke with the Church of Scientology. And sort of stood outside, sort of staring at them, at the building, and caused, apparently he believes he caused them to move from the building.
Yeah,
and then later on, the Mocha Bar in London, which was described as the first place in London to serve proper espresso coffee.
Yeah.
But Burroughs was affronted by their outrageous and unprovoked discourtesy and poisonous cheesecake. And did the same to them, and they closed down 3 months later.
Yeah, that story gets repeated a lot, the Mocha Bar one.
Yes.
And
what do you think?
I think he did. He did set out a campaign of kind of threatening behaviour towards them just by standing imposingly outside their bar in Soho, which is like just a very small kind of cafe on the street front there.
Right.
And peering through the window.
Yeah,
and give one of his kind of awkward little smiles at the proprietors, and also do a lot of recording. So he's probably sitting there with headphones on, with a microphone in one hand, like a pioneer field recordist, just like just recording.
So he made his tapes on the street.
Yeah, he would make the tapes, take them home, cut them up, and then go back and play them back. He was into this idea of upsetting atmospheres in places and creating disturbances by. Playing back material back into an environment. I mean, he had the idea that you could start riots by just playing back recordings of police sirens, people screaming, or gunshots. You know, if you play back recordings of gunshots in a crowd, you soon create disturbance. But I mean, we're talking about basic tape recorders with built-in monophonic speakers. It's like how anyone could be confused between a real riot situation and a tiny little thing coming out of a portable tape recorder. I don't know, but
did he actually do this in public then? He would go to public places and play these sounds.
Well, he did with the Mocha Bar, that's for sure.
What did he play to them?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what was on those tapes, to be honest. But I think he, whatever recordings he gathered from the site, he would then go home and imbibe them with some cursed kind of negativity.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
I don't know, really.
Yeah.
I mean, he's proudly then said that it worked because the Mocha Bar closed down. Yeah, but the reality of the situation is that they moved on to a bigger and better thing. And they were probably fed up with seeing him as well. So that would be another reason to move on. But I don't think he could really claim that he had the power to shut down. It's a lovely idea. I like the idea. And I like the idea that he thinks and he writes with that sort of sense, because it empowers your own system if you believe that it works. It's a self-fulfilling thing. If you believe you're having this effect, then...
Does the record possess any of this quality?
Well, this record...
Yeah.
For me, what I really liked about this, and the original is actually quite a bit longer, the CD edition is over an hour. It's about 66 minutes.
Mm.
So this has been stripped down quite a bit. There's a lot of the repetition is taken out of it. And... some of the more straight reading sections, that's gone. So this is basically the core of that CDR. I think it works very well, but I'm actually more used to hearing the full-length CD, because that's the thing that I remember that I've heard and have had for years and years.
Right.
And the effect that has is it's a very repetitious, hypnotic, meditational, relaxing thing.
Okay.
And because a lot of the content of it is quite... mystifying, you don't quite know what it is and what he's on about. It always felt like a sound poetry piece, and far closer to sound poetry than anything that you might know of Burroughs' recordings, because there are no readings. It's not a reading of his material,
right?
And it's not one of those sort of college tours where he'd go out and make everybody guffaw in the audience with his kind of very amusing routines that he used to do live. It's none of that. It's none of that at all. This is him in his flat in Duke Street.
Duke Street, St. James, London, where he lived for a while.
Yeah, he was resident there on and off for most of the 60s.
Right.
And on into the early 70s as well. So, but he had various other commitments, and he did travel about a bit to do work, really. I mean, he was working as a reporter to some extent.
Right. So how did you get involved with the production of this piece?
We're going to have to think now, because I spent a lot of time trying to track down how to put this out officially, and I contacted the people in London who control his literary material.
Who are they
called Wileys or
something? Oh, yeah.
I'm confusing that with another publisher, aren't I? But something like that. But anyway, it was nothing really came of it. And then it was because there was this long hiatus as to what to do with his audio material. So nothing happened for a long time. And now you might notice there's a glut of things coming out, mostly reissues of all the stuff that he did.
You've already produced something, haven't you? What was it? What's your previous Burroughs album?
No.
That's not you?
No.
So what have we... Well, we've got a few things here. We've got Real English Tea Made Here.
Yeah.
Which is a 3-CD compilation. Breakthrough in Grey Room.
Mm-hmm.
Who issued that? Sub Rosa.
Yeah, that's a reissue. The CD. It came out a long time ago.
And we've got an LP about the...
Nothing here
now but the recordings.
Yeah.
A cassette, William Burroughs Opens Fire, which might be of interest to you, with Nova Express and Cities of the Red Night.
I don't know. That sounds like it's got to be readings, I presume.
Yeah, yeah. quite possibly. Yeah. So what should we do? Should we play this piece?
I think it'd be quite nice to maybe just start at the beginning of this album and play 5 or 6 minutes of it. It's only in... I've divided it into 3 tracks, not 97, you'll be glad to know.
Uh-huh.
And...
Were they originally 97 separate tracks?
No, no.
Or is it something that blurs it?
Well, like I say, that it's one piece, actually. Well, I think it's two pieces, because there's a clear kind of... The first piece that we'll play this chunk of consists of a set of words, power words to him at the time, that he then cuts up on the page and rearranges on the page and reads them out. And records them. And then that recording is subsequently cut up. Not massively. I mean, there's just a few, you know, cuts here and there, presumably at random. And then played back over a second machine whilst recording onto another machine. So there's a lot of this layering stuff.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen his photo montages, for instance.
Yeah.
Photos of photos of photos.
Yeah, right.
Which are and end up really dense and complex and patterned. But this is a much simpler... idea of that sort of thing, and I reckon it's from 1968. That's my best guess as to when this was done.
Okay, so there's no separate title. We just the whole. This is track one from Curse Go Back.
Curse Go Back, part one.
Okay.
This material, if and when to be cut up, overlaid, speeded up, slowed down, inched. Run through echo chambers. The cut-ups showed us how to cut up. We now know what to cut up.
That's little pictures. One solid pyramid going no brandy. Stay at 2 solid eggs going no brandy. Lighting the infection with a gun. Then barely hear it run forward and back. Drinking this drill driving.
To have it all, to have not any.
Like to be a body, to have a body, to... there, buddy, coming light. Me, buddy, school problem, coming the box. No one. Creating to destroy the future. To stay everywhere. 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 To stay nowhere. Destroy the future. Oil's going away. Spot, spot, spot. Action. Spirits, to have nowhere, to do wrong, here to stay there, to stay near, to stay nowhere, far, to stay near, to stay far, to stay near, to stay far. To stay, to be everything, destroying to create the masses. Stay near.
You, my other self, splendidly to do the body pictures. Give me a confident spirit, creating to destroy the body pictures. Half will be step reaction, or crack, crack, split away. Luck.
To the left. To stay present. To have everything. Spot it. Spot it. Spot it. Spot it. Spot it. Spot it. To stay everything. Spot it. Spot it. Spot it. One solid pyramid going away.
Future, create, destroy, destroy spirits, bodies, run about, bring it, hot body, do everything to do. Nothing to stay up, to stay down and up. Breathe in, breathe it, put it up, down and up, breathe.
If you spot it. Spot it. Destroying to create the space. To be a god. Spot it. To be a god. Spot it. To be everybody. To stay in. To do a god.
Coming in.
Okay, so we'll pause it there halfway through this track. Do you know how he composed these things? Where did he get the words from? Are they found texts?
I've no idea.
Okay, fine. we'll move on quickly from that. And you are.
A lot of it is. All I can say is that they were words that he considered to be power words at the time.
And, yes.
And there's a lot of repetition on the other tracks. Actually, there's more repetition. It's even slower and more gappy. And I just really like the kind. It just kind of washes over you in a very therapeutic and calm way. I quite like it.
Right. That sounds at odds with what might be called a slightly malevolent title. You make it sound calm and meditative, whereas in actual fact there seems to be this kind of underlying theme of bad vibes.
Curse, go back. Well, that's why I never really liked the title. I mean, I had various neutral sounding titles for this.
Right.
And,
all right.
You know, they insisted. And so, curse, go back, it is.
Okay. The other thing, well, you can skip past this next one too, because whenever I mention Scientology to you, you kind of veer away. What is the problem with that?
I don't know. There's no problem with it.
Okay. But there's a suggestion that they are litigious or something. No.
I don't know much about the subject really. I'm certainly no expert on cults.
No.
Cults and curses. I know. Nothing.
I thought you were.
For me, it's a work of sound poetry, and it has that strong, you know, feel to me. Is that it's just doesn't it remind you of, you've heard so much sound poetry as well? It's, yeah. You know, the idea that it's just.
Yeah, but it's his tone of voice is one thing, isn't it? Nobody's got a voice like Burroughs.
That's true.
The whole tenor of his kind of the way he's speaking is 90% of it, isn't it?
I mean, if anyone else did it, it wouldn't be the same, that's for sure.
I mean, he could read a menu or a telephone directory with that voice, and you'd kind of get a sort of...
I do really like certain voices. So other voices that I've worked with, people like Adam Bowman, for instance, again, did very distinctive tone.
Yes.
And also your very own Maurice Seddon.
Oh, right.
Very distinctive tone.
And we can listen to all day.
Yeah,
and we have.
Well, pretty much. And there are other people that I know in life who haven't recorded their voices that I think, my God, you know, almost everything you say could be an album. Just your speaking voice.
Exactly.
You know, and clearly Burroughs is one of those voices, isn't it, really? I mean, it's unmistakable. And people describe it in various different ways. But I think he also had...
It's kind of relentless as well, isn't it? There's a sort of... It's like something that could go on.
It is on this.
On
it is on this record, but other things, they're much more. Sometimes it's just very dry, isn't it? I mean, when he's sort of telling something that's humorous or something that's really brutal, and he just tells it in a very dry, matter-of-fact way.
Well, it's a sort of deadpan delivery,
yes.
And it does sound comical. And you're left thinking, is it supposed to be comical? Or did he find it comical?
Exactly, because he's not laughing.
No.
You know. But apparently he was a funny guy. You know,
right.
People who have met him said, yeah, he was. He was an extremely entertaining and funny guy, which I can easily imagine, because obviously he's very bright. I mean, a lot of his, a lot of his more thought through kind of things his Mayan mythologies and a lot of other stuff that he was very creatively thinking around. And he was mixing a lot of his own ideas up, other people's ideas, his ideas, and sort of so clearly, you know, an intelligent man, and I think also kind of. Quite prophetic. I think a lot of what he had to say about images, for instance, you know, the idea of millions of images is very much like a precursor of the net.
So I think
like with Ballard, a lot of Ballard's thinking about his writings, Ballard's, you know, short novels and the longer ones too, are very kind of like seeing the near future quite well. Yeah, so I'd credit Burroughs with that.
You were going to talk about Kansas. You went to Kansas.
That's right. I mean, I started, then I drifted onto other stuff. So I'll try and sort of talk about Kansas without drifting. I was out there last year by chance, because I had to do a performance in Kansas City. And whilst I was there, and I'd been working on doing this record for some months prior to that, And I said, look, I'm coming to Kansas. Can't we, you know, surely we should just meet up for a cup of tea or something. Because they only live 40 miles outside of Kansas. Although having said that...
In this house in Lawrence?
Well, I mean, I don't know. They don't live... One guy certainly lives there that I met there. Others just use it as a place to convene. But they have offices that are just a couple of blocks away, which is where I think they work and do all the working and thinking of what next with the big empire. As you know, certain dates come up. There was a 50th anniversary of Naked Lunch, for instance, so they produced a nice edition of it. And
so their sole sort of raison d'être is the Burroughs estate. This is what
Certainly enough of it, isn't there? I mean, he did these paintings. There's lots of photography. There's the writings, and then there's all this fairly uncatalogued audio recordings.
Right.
You know, a lot of it's these guys work quite slowly, to be perfectly honest. They're not. They have a fair amount of leisure time out there, I would say.
So you made an arrangement to, you kind of went...
So it was when I was in Kansas City that I actually got the invitation to come out to Lawrence. And I thought, oh, great, it's simple. I'll just get a train out there. But of course, there's one or two trains that go out. Nobody goes. I mean, public transport is in the Midwest is like, I don't know who you have to be to use it. You have to be deeply impoverished to not have a car.
Right.
So, and also the frequency of services was like one a day. It's like, can you imagine a train from a big, British city to say London to Aylesbury? That'd be an equivalent sort of journey. Like, and there's one a day.
So in the end, I got a friend,
someone I had met in Kansas who I was been working with to drive me out, which was perfect because I really needed that. Otherwise, it wouldn't have happened.
We
just went out there for a late afternoon and had dinner in the house that Burroughs lived in for all those years. Very humble, small house, like a bungalow or sort of wooden shiplapped bungalow with a front porch, but not large. You know, quite small, and not at all up to date and modern inside. Quite old and basic, just like what you see of all the photos of Burroughs in like the Beat Hotel or Spartan comes to mind.
Right,
very very simplistic lifestyle. You know, overgrown garden with weeds. You know, used for where he had his target practice and an orgone accumulator. And a lot of cats. A lot of cats.
He had an orgone accumulator in the backyard. Is this the Wilhelm Reich gadget?
Yeah.
Okay. So he...
Oh, yeah. That was just something... That was just part of his baggage, really. It's it was there, along with an assortment of firearms, you know.
Right.
I mean, I didn't see these things, but that was pretty much his lifestyle, really.
Yeah.
He was known for that and known for keeping a lot of cats.
Okay.
So.
Right.
Yeah. And so it was an interesting insight to go there and just meet the guys and have a look around the house. And
so how was, I mean, were they conducive to your project? You know, were they in favour of it or did they think they could do it?
It was hard to work out at the time. It was quite a confusing evening. There were just kind of misunderstandings that occurred. In the course of the evening, but no, nothing.
What kind of misunderstanding?
Some American expressions seem to mean the opposite. Well, I mean, yeah, but no, I mean, it went well, obviously, and the project went ahead. But it was so much nicer to do this after meeting the people involved rather than just do it blindly. Like, you know, it's nice to come back from that. From Kansas, and then think, okay, I've met these people. It's there's a the dialogue can continue at a more sort of friendly level rather than just businesslike,
right?
Because
right.
Yeah, so it is always, and normally if artists are alive or their kind of estate or whatever, it's quite nice to have that continuity.
Yeah,
which kind of brings me onto the cover, really.
Oh yes, we wanted to talk about the cover
because
the photographs. There's a sheet with nine, looks like a contact sheet.
Yeah.
Photographs, are they by Harriet Crowder, is it?
Or, that's right.
Yeah, photographs by Harriet Crowder. And then on the actual sleeve itself, back cover, it was taken in Brecon, Wales, 1960.
Yeah.
What did you want to say about these images?
Well, I just at the time when I was thinking of doing this, turning this CDR into reissuing it in some form, either as a very long record or as another CD, I made the acquaintance of Jim Pennington, who works just upstairs of a printer that I was using on the same street that I live on. And I'd been using the printer just to print inserts for other albums that I'd been running at the time. And he happened to notice these jobs being printed and was kind of curious, like, oh, who's the client for this? Because it's like, you know, it seems more interesting than the average pizza delivery, pizza printing that normally goes
on.
Is
he a poet?
He's not. He's a publisher.
Yeah. And in fact, he Alo's Books, is it?
Yeah.
Because I just noticed on the sleeve, it says Alo's Books and Paradigm Discs.
Yeah, yeah. He's indeed, he's the producer of this in many ways. And I made his acquaintance and then spent a lot of time with him. And then one day when I was in his office, he suddenly said, oh, I've got all these unseen photos of Burroughs.
Wow.
He's a big kind of Burroughs fan, and he's published various bits and bobs of, you know, various beat culture.
Yeah.
In fact, I almost thought of bringing him along for this as well, because he'd be someone that would, maybe it'd be good to interview him just about his own publishing company.
Yeah.
But so he had all these photos, and they were like reels of, you know, a couple of reels of Burroughs shots, and then a reel of...
So was this complete coincidence?
Total coincidence.
You both happened to be using the same printer.
I couldn't believe it.
No.
I mean, his offices are in a sort of like they're very insecure. They're not, you know, you could probably barge in with your elbow to get into this building.
Shh.
And I'm not telling
we
you.
We don't know where they are.
No, you don't know where it is. No. Well, you might track it down, but I don't think the negs are there anymore. But, you know, for me, it was just like, these are unique. These should be in a vault somewhere, or at least in a safe, you know, locked up.
Yeah.
And there they were on his workbench, you know, negatives, you know, these Hasselblad negatives for unseen images of Geissen and Burroughs.
Fantastic.
So that when I saw these images, I thought, blimey, these would make a good cover.
Yeah.
It's like this is everything just fell into place.
Yeah.
You know, and it became something that, with his encouragement, I decided to do it. Really, that was the real kind of like, yeah, it's going to be.
So these photographs have not been published before?
No.
No. Well, that's,
no.
That's,
he had
that's
a,
something.
He did actually show a bunch of them recently in upstairs of a pub, near Mornington Crescent. Well, in Camden, near back of the British Library.
When you look at the images, he looks sort of somewhat like a rather sort of morose kind of math teacher or something, doesn't he?
That's
sort of like
his look.
Suit with a kind of buttoned-up cardigan, shirt and tie.
Yeah.
You know, bit of hair hanging over his forehead.
Not the archetypal, junkie.
No, exactly.
Not really, you know, with the Homburg and the tie. He certainly really cultivated that image of the clean-looking, you know, making an effort in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, very old school.
Yeah.
And yet being a pioneer of getting lunched out, you know, in a big way.
Yeah.
On the nod.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
As he would famously write in so many of his novels.
Should we play a bit more? Do you want to play the rest of
why don't we
this
play,
track one? Or do you want to skip on to something?
No, I think I would like to hear the rest of this track, to be honest.
Okay.
Creating to up thee now, past progress, upping the reaction time, be, do, stay, have to be a body, to body be, two, to have the words, to be two bodies, two bodies be the word be two words, me, you, my other self, splendidly to do the body pictures, hear me, God, a spirit creating to destroy your body pictures. Have to be, do, stay, reaction.
Four
stay space. Present. Destroy to create the mind. Present. To stay present. Creating to destroy the life. Destroying to create the existence. To stay absent. To stay present. To stay absent. Destroy the life. To stay. To create bodies. Destroying.
Destroy the past.
Solid pyramid going away. Going away to stay absent. Two solid eggs going away. Light the action. Spot God there, here, up, down, forward, back, creating, destroying. To be present, a hollow oval coming in. To be absent, to be bodies, creating the hollow absent life. Four hollow coils coming in. Light the progress.
Strange ending to track one.
It is.
Quick burst of radio.
I know. It must have just been on the tape. You know, it's all very casually done.
Yeah. I think, listening to that, I think what interests me about it is that he's not trying to be a poet, is he? It's not, unlike, you know, poets or even sound poets, it isn't poetry. It might become poetic in some strange obtuse way.
Yeah.
But he's not trying to create poetry, is he?
No, it's an experiment, isn't it?
In words.
Yeah.
It's a word experiment.
Well, yeah, that's what he did a lot of, didn't he, really?
Yeah.
That cut up.
But that's the sort of fascination about it. You're kind of trying to grasp a meaning in it, or is there any meaning there? You know, he suddenly drops in this thing about God and the pyramids sort of moving away and solid objects and so on. You think, does it mean anything or not?
Well,
and why do we listen to it? It doesn't mean anything.
That's for the researcher to discover for themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you've been listening to Wavelength, or you're still listening to Wavelength, on Resonance 104.4 FM with today's guest, Clive Graham, what do I call you, director or something?
Director.
What are you? Paradigm Discs.
What do I call you?
Well, you name can call yourself.
Me, what title?
Proprietor, director, sole owner, publisher.
I just run it.
You're a runner.
Yeah, run the label.
So you run Paradigm Discs, and your latest release is William S. Burroughs' Curse Go Back, only available on vinyl at the moment.
Yeah.
And where can people obtain this?
I don't know.
Fine. Okay, we'll move on quickly. Well, they can't get it anywhere.
No, that's right. Completely unavailable. Actually, it is fairly unavailable because I've sold them all. I mean, I'm
okay. So end of program.
All right. Everyone sort of.
You sold them all.
Well, no, I'm going to do some more.
How many did you do?
I did 1,000.
Excuse me, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You sold 1,000?
Yeah.
It's only been out about 2 weeks.
No, it's been out over a month now.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Well, I've shifted that many. Where they've gone is another matter. I mean, whether they've actually sold from other places, I don't know. But
right. So yeah. Nobody can get it now. You can't guess it. It's secondhand, probably.
No one's selling them. They're all hoarding them.
Right.
Closely.
Okay. So you're producing a second edition.
It's a third one, really, because they're in editions of 500. So,
okay.
So it's a third edition of 500. And yeah, that'll come out next month.
Uh-huh.
But everything takes time. I mean, it takes a long time to get a reprint.
So the people that got these precious objects, how did they get them?
Not from you, from your website. I don't.
Oh, you don't sell them yourself.
Well, I do, but not in that kind of quantity. I mean, I have distributors. Most of them have gone to America.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, about 700 went to America.
Right.
No, hang on. I can't remember. But half of them probably.
Right.
So, and from there they'll go everywhere as well. They might even come back to Europe as far as I know.
Yeah.
And from there they probably go to Japan. I mean,
they'll come back like the curse.
Yes. As long as I don't want them coming back to me, that's for sure. I live on the third floor and these things are heavy.
Right.
And they're not coming back. Every day the postman's bringing back another pile more.
Yeah.
No, let's hope not.
So what else have you got coming up? You have other publications.
One of the reasons for going to Kansas was to do this show with Dwight Frizzell, Reverend Dwight Frizzell.
Mm.
And it was kind of like an anniversary of a project that he's been working on, and over the years, it's like a continual project. And so 40 years on of Beyond the Black Crack, so there'll be an anniversary edition of that. We'll do a show if you like.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a great record. I really like it. And I mean, I put it out in...
Why is it called Beyond the Black Crack, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I'm not the right person to ask.
Is he a real reverend?
Yeah, he is.
Which denomination?
Is it the Church of Life or something? I can't remember. But he wanted to ordain me, actually, when I was out there. I stayed at his place.
Yeah.
And...
But is it like a Christian thing, or is he just like one of these kind of his own religion?
He's from Kansas. Everyone does Christianity there.
Okay.
It's just unbelievable amounts of it, you know.
Right.
There's churches everywhere. And he's from Independence, Missouri, which is kind of just, it's on the kind of, on the east side of Kansas City.
Right.
And which is where Truman lived. And there's a lot of, Harry Truman retired there. And we had this conversation before about Truman, didn't we? Anyways. Another time.
Yes.
So that's where he's from, and there's a lot of churches, a lot of Mormon territory. But he became a reverend to escape going to Vietnam, essentially. And becoming a reverend in America is just, it's paperwork, really. You just and $10 or something.
Right.
So then you can, you know, you can become.
So what does he do? Is it gospel or?
He's not really what I'd call a firm believer. In any one faith or another.
Right.
But he's certainly a spiritual guy, that's for sure. And he's qualified to do weddings and funerals and does them.
Right.
He does both.
Okay.
On the understanding that he can play in the band after the...
So this is your next release, The Reverend Dwight Frizzell.
Well, it's a teenage work that he put together when he was a student at the Art Institute in Kansas, which is where we played this gig, which was like a reenactment of the track one off the album, which came out in 1976.
Right.
And, it's quite a complex mythology, the Black Crack.
Yeah.
So, and that's in the pipeline. That's on its way out.
When is that coming out?
I get a test pressing this next month in a couple of weeks.
Fine. Well, you can come back with that then.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And there's other things also coming along, so we'll do one at a time.
Yep.
But it's all a bit active at the moment.
So shall we end with some more Burroughs?
If you must.
Yes, I think so. We might as well end some more from Curse Go Back by William S. Burroughs.
You're going to do a bit of a random thing or just going
to
start?
It's up to you.
Track two or three.
Which track? Should we just go on with this?
Let's just start with the beginning of side two, just to give people a bit of the blast of side two.
Which is track number...
Three.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Clive, for coming
for
in.
Thank you very much.
Once again, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Oil's coming in to have to be a body. To have hollow bodies, to do everything to do. Light the reaction words, to have much, to have to stay there, to be up, to do down light. Four solid coils coming in to do nothing. Solid prisons coming into hollow eggs. The conditions to stay back, to have to be, to do it all. Not any spirits do God's conditions. The masses. The masses. The masses. The mass. Light. 30 feet ahead to the left. Spot it, spot it, spot it. The masses. The pictures. The masses. The masses. The masses. The masses. Destroying to create the existence. Not any spirits do God's conditions. Stay the condition to hollow eggs. Way to stay absent to solid eggs going. Words to be others' words, others' pictures. Down, forward, back, creating, destroying. The reaction greedily to solid, flattened, absent bodies creating the hollow. Destroying words, the pictures, words. The reaction, the progress, spot it. Light the words. The masses. The masses. The particles. The masses. The masses. The masses. The mass. To be myself. The masses. Four hollow cubes going away. Spot, spot, spot. Masses. The masses. The masses. The masses. To have to have. The particles. The masses. The masses. The masses. Three hollow coils coming in. Spot, spot, spot. The masses. The masses. To stay present. The masses. The masses. The masses. To have to stay. The masses. The masses. To stay up. The masses. The reaction. The masses. The masses. The masses. The masses. Stay out. The masses. The masses. The masses. Three hollow coils coming in. Spot, spot, spot. The masses. The masses. The masses. To do right, creating to destroy the matter. The matter. To be nobody, to be nobody, to be nobody. Two hollow eggs going away, spot, to have to stay, spot. The masses, the masses. Creating to destroy the words. Light, 30 feet ahead to the left.